Hey there. Welcome to Cageless, a conversation podcast about experiential wisdom and personal hope. I'm Jenny Johnson. I'm a writer, and I'm asking experts, thought leaders, and my friends to share their knowledge and tools on how they found freedom. Hello, everyone. So excited to be here today. My guest is someone I think you're probably the first person that I've interviewed from as far away as you are in terms of origin. Today we have on Mr. Oliver, who is the host and creator of the Earful Tower podcast. He is originally Australian, but he's been in Paris since 2015. He's married, he has a kid, and he runs one of the biggest travel podcasts in the world, amongst other things. Hi, Oliver.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm so good. Thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, we were just talking before we started recording that there is a really wonderful construction going on outside of my Parisian apartment. We are both in Paris, just not in the same area. Which, where are you located?
I'm in the 7th arrondissement. I can't hear the construction behind you, so maybe it's not so bad.
Yeah. That's great. And how did you end up in that area? Because as we'll probably get into, Paris, each area is very different.
Yeah, well, we were living in Montmartre before. So for people who aren't familiar with it, that's like winding roads, cobblestones, narrow, you know, everything's narrow and pokey and small. And we lived on the top floor with no elevator. And then when we knew a baby was coming along, we realized that we needed something a bit more comfortable, a bit more space, and we didn't want to carry a stroller up 5-6 flights of steps every day. So we didn't really choose the 7th arrondissement. It sort of, that's kind of how it goes in Paris, at least for us. It just fell into our lap. And this district is way grander, big, wide avenues and sidewalks. And it feels to me that there is an elevator in every apartment block. So, you know, we were pretty sold on it from the beginning. So that's how we ended up here. We didn't choose it. It just fell there and we took it. And we've been here for 2 years now.
That's also no small feat. I know that a lot of the Parisians or people that have lived in Paris tend to move around until they find like the perfect neighborhood or the perfect apartment. But you came from Australia originally. Are you from a like bigger city, a bigger area?
Yeah, I sort of moved all around Australia, so I don't even really know where I'm like from. I realize that sounds weird, but like we moved every couple of years. So I grew up on one side and then was like a teenager on the other side. And so a mix of cities. We lived on a farm at one point with cows and everything. So I don't, like, honestly, under the age of 20, I don't know who I am. But since then, I've lived in big cities like London, Stockholm, and Paris. So I suppose that makes me a city person. But it's weird because I felt like I was quite comfortable on farms and so on. But when I went back to Australia recently, I found that I kept thinking there could be a snake there somewhere. But when I was a kid, I probably didn't think about that almost at all. So I don't know. I guess you're always changing, right?
Yeah. The way that your like brain works in conjunction with the location that you're in is crazy. Like I just came, I've been traveling for the past year, but I have started walking much more obviously around the city. And I'm like, where am I going to find like grass for my dog to pee? Like, where am I going to find sunshine? Like all of these things that you don't really think about if you're in a different location. But you mentioned that you have lived in several different countries, continents. How did you start traveling going from being from Australia?
I did what a lot of Australians do. And as soon as I finished studying, I just went. And I guess my dad traveled an awful lot when he was younger. And my mom, who is from England, she ended up living in Australia. So it was not really a foreign idea to me to travel around. And then, so I was in my early 20s and I booked a one-way ticket to Arusha in Tanzania. And from New Zealand, where I'd been spending a bit of time, and I just got a ticket to there. And then I'd bought another ticket out of Nairobi something like 3 months later. And then I just went and traveled around East Africa with no real agenda. And then I got to London and I was I know a lot of people say they were broke. I was properly, properly broke. Like, I rocked up in London with £20 that someone had, a kind soul had given to me in Tanzania. And then I didn't even know where to go or what to do from there. Like, I just looked up some relatives because my mom is British, and then I figured it out. And then sort of that was, I guess, that sort of jumping in the deep end idea didn't terrify me. And when it comes to moving to Paris, which I did, I don't know, it must have been 5 years later, I moved to Paris, and it wasn't perhaps as intimidating as it might be for other people who've not done that kind of thing before, you know? So, 2015, I took a one-way ticket down here for a job, and I'm still here.
No joke. And did you know growing up that you wanted to travel, or like, was this like a completely different trajectory of like, because freelancing and or like working as a like creative, not for like a huge corporation, isn't something that a lot of people, I at least in my experience, have been like, yeah, I want to do that, because it can be scary. Like, you don't work for someone else, you work for yourself. Did you know that you always wanted to do that?
No, but I knew that I was really interested in traveling, and I'm sure that's because my dad would say, you know, point out things on maps or see things on TV. And then I remember when I was going through university, I worked in a bookshop, and I was really the most taken by, consider all the books that there were. It was like the Lonely Planet guides that really got me excited. Like, the new ones would come in, and I'd go to put them on the shelf, and I'd be like, India. Yeah, India, maybe India. You know, and I had that feeling. I was really, it was strong. And then, so I traveled like an awful lot. And then continually, I worked in London, and when I could, I just went down to Europe and explored, spent all the money that I'd earned in London doing that, and so on and so on. And as for working, the first job I got was as a journalist, and I did that for a handful of years in Stockholm and Paris. And then it was kind of it wasn't what you said, really. It was more like, I didn't aspire to be a freelancer or aspire to do my own thing. I was in a company doing a full-time job, but it was after having done that that I wanted to do my own thing. It was like, I said it before, but I figured I was living in Paris, this fascinating city where I wanted to see how everything was, how it worked. And the problem was, I was working 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. I never had the chance to see things like if the local bakery was busy at Wednesday at 10 in the morning. I had no idea. Like, what do the popular streets look like on a Thursday afternoon? Can you get a seat in that cafe? I had no idea. And I was like, this is silly. Like, I want to know this city. And so, long story short, I'd started a radio show on the side of this journalism gig, and it picked up. Like, looking back, it picked up pretty quickly. And then I just threw everything in, and I took a huge leap to try and make it a full-time job. I just wanted minimum wage. That was my goal. And now it's a company, and now it's a full-on, you know, now this is me. Here we are.
And the Earful Tower, for those of you that don't know, I will make sure to link all of their information in the show notes. But it is an extremely helpful collective of information on the internet. They have podcast, Instagram, YouTube, of just like, it's not like the very cliche Pinterest type advice of the city, as Oliver was mentioning. It's like, when you come to a city of such like rich culture and experience, you want to experience it, not just watch it. You know, like, I think as Anthony Bourdain says, he's like, don't like be a traveler, don't be a tourist. And so how did you find yourself wanting to create the Earful Tower with your wife? Because you guys do it together.
Yeah, well, she sort of came into the picture later, really. Like, I kind of just wanted to meet people who were doing interesting things, like people who'd written books or people who, like tour guides. I found them to be really interesting in those early days because they'd sort of mastered this city that I found really intriguing. And I just wanted to learn myself. And I think I was pretty naturally curious. And I think people who listen to podcasts like to feel that they've got someone guiding them along who's not afraid to, you know, explain things, if you know, spell things out a little bit, as well as reveal whole new sides. And like you said, there's a lot of people doing the Pinterest side of Paris. And I realized from the very, I mean, I knew before I started the podcast that there's enough people doing that. So I always wanted to just take it one level deeper, which you know, those pictures that you see, beautiful Instagram accounts of the Eiffel Tower at sunset, that's great. Like there's plenty of space for that on the internet. But if you just scratch beneath that surface, there's an awful lot. And you can really, you don't need to scratch, you can get out a spade and really get deep, like deep, literally underground. There's so much going on in this city beyond that stuff. So I got no problem with the people that share all the beautiful pictures and nothing else of Paris, because, that's totally legit. But I'm much more interested, especially after doing it for 6-7 years now, I'm way more interested in, you know, what's underneath that surface.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you tell me a little bit about like your process of like, because you have been here for a while, what do you like, how can you decide like what area to pick or like what things to talk about? Like, does your audience tell you like, we want to know a little bit more about this? Or like, do you kind of go like scratch your own itch?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I could discuss this for a really long time, because I don't even know, like there's an example of, there's these like doors, and they have the doors in Paris are really magical. They're fantastic. Sometimes they've got ornate, intricate details and whatever. And sometimes I find myself taking pictures of them. And if I share them, and if people respond well to them, it makes me go, okay, if I see another good door, I'll share it. So on a really deeper level, I don't know if that means that people are influencing me by reacting positively to things, or if it's my own itch that I'm scratching. Like, and eventually, you don't know. I have no idea. And I think about it kind of often, whether I'm doing it because I know people will like it, or whether it's because I'm legitimately interested, or both, or neither, or whatever. But the simple answer is, and I give you a really good tangible example, if I see something that I am interested in, I'll go in on it. So about a week ago, I was walking down Rue de Beaune, which is in the 7th arrondissement, and I looked through a window amongst all these antique shops, and there was a shop that just was selling canes, like walking stick canes. And I said to my wife, I was like, I wonder what the story is there. Like, how do they have 1,000 antique canes? How did that happen? And then I said, you know what? I'm just going to go in and ask her. And I went in, talked really briefly, and said, look, this is fascinating. I'd love to feature you on my show. And I said to her, like, look up what I do, so you know I'm not crazy. You know, I don't want them to think I'm going to steal a business idea or whatever. I said, look up what I do. I'm going to email you, and hopefully we can organize something. And then I think it was the very next day, I was back in there with a photographer, my microphone, and I did this big episode about this woman, this intriguing woman with 1,000 canes. And if canes don't sound interesting, like, these are the canes where there's a pistol inside one, or like a violin inside, not like this, or blow darts or whatever. Like, it was just fascinating. So this is a city that has a million such stories, and in terms of finding them, it's just as easy as walking down the street, looking through the windows, and having an ounce of curiosity in your blood, and it's there to be taken.
And you mentioned like being a journalist beforehand. I guess that makes sense. Like, you kind of have to have a little bit of curiosity to explore any city. Otherwise, you are just going to go, you know, see the Eiffel Tower. Like, you're going to go to like the very, I don't like the word cliche, because I also don't really believe in guilty pleasures, because I think they're good. Like, I think they are what they are for a reason. Sure. But it's also really interesting to be able to, you know, kind of create your own stories. I think of like the cliche, like Midnight in Paris. Like, you don't have to live in like the really old stories. You can kind of like create your own adventures. So has Paris been, because you've been here for almost 10 years now, which that I've also been learning that that's kind of rare. I've been here for 3 weeks and I'm still kind of struggling. But do you find yourself wanting to explore, like deep dive any other countries? Or do you feel like you kind of like, this is your home now?
Yeah, I don't know. That's another impossible one to answer quickly. But like before the pandemic, I was really geared up to go and start a sister podcast in Italy. I was really into the idea, and it was just when the Eiffel Tower was starting to take off, and then COVID sort of put the brakes on it, and then since then, like, we've had a son, and I don't know, this, the Paris arm of it has really grown, so I sort of put that on the distant back shelf. I tried for a while. I did one season of the podcast about Sweden, sort of as a way to test if it would work in other countries. It was really encouraging, but I think it needs a big team to really spread like that. And there's a lot of questions involved, like, would I have to host it? I can't host a podcast in every single city in the world. And also there's the element of, like, I am legitimately really interested in things here, and it wouldn't be genuine of me asking some of those kind of questions in other countries, because maybe I would have just read it somewhere. It wouldn't be the same kind of, I've seen this on a daily walk and wondered about it. I don't know. So I don't know is the answer, but it's in Paris for now, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what, as a podcaster creator, what does like an everyday in your life like look like?
Yeah, it is weird, because sometimes the things that, like, it probably sounds extremely glamorous. I know it does, because people say that to me, that it sounds like a very glamorous life, because it's true that I get to go and do really cool things. Like, I get like a really fun example is there's a chateau called Chateau Vaux-le-Vicomte, which is just outside of Paris, and it's kind of like Versailles, but it's the little brother of Versailles, maybe. And the guy that owns it, like, you should look it up, this place is amazing. The guy that owns it just invited me out there, and he's like, what do you want to see? And I was like, everything. And I got to go out there, and me and my wife are out there when there wasn't a single tourist at all, and he just showed us, the owner of the place was just showing us everything. He's like, you want to go to the dome on the top of the chateau? You want me to drive you out and turn on the fountains? And like, you sort of these pinch yourself moments. I'm like, how did this happen? How is this my job? And all that I'm expected to do is like interview him and take some videos and like those kind of things. Or even the cane lady last week, just that she wants to take the time to show me 50 gadget canes and all the cool things inside it. Like, it's I get to do exactly what I like, and that's very cool and glamorous. But obviously, as you'll find out as your time in France continues, there are a lot of headaches. Like, starting a company in an administrative nightmare country like France, in a nightmare language like French, it's no walk in the park at all. Like, there's so much going on behind the scenes that's zero glamorous. Like, zero glamorous. And you know, we do a lot of work. Like, behind the scenes, we make books and children's books, and we self-publish them. And it's so awesome. Like, this morning, I loaded up boxes of our children's books on my scooter, and I scooted under the Louvre to deliver a big order of books. And that was, like, part of it is that's the coolest thing ever. And then another part of it is, you know, then I have to sit there and write out the invoice and chase up other invoices in French. And I'm like, what am I doing? This is like, so there's a huge, you know, the things that you see on Instagram or TikTok or the podcast are often the cool things and the fun things. But there's, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I'm just walking on clouds here. There's a lot of work that goes into making something like this happen.
And like being an entrepreneur in a different, I mean, being an entrepreneur, period, being a creative entrepreneur in a different country, I have gotten questions, and people are like, how do you like do that? And I'm still kind of like, I don't really know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm still figuring it out.
It must be luck. I don't know.
It must be, or just, I think a lot of the combination of luck and a lot of hard work.
Yeah, of course.
I'm trying to think who said, I think Kerry Washington created I think it was a speech, and she was like, you know, like, opportunity is like, you know, like a bus. Like, yeah, the bus has to come, but you also like have to be able to get on it. Like, you physically have to walk onto it. So like being prepared to meet the opportunity with your hard work, or like with whatever creativity and talent that you have. I was checking out your YouTube page, and like, I went to your very, very first video that was what, like 5 or 6 years ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, first of all, he looks so young. Second of all, you were already like, it's not like like your skills were already so developed and like good at that point.
What was the first video? What was it?
You were saying like five things that like you, if you can't talk in French, you need to know these five phrases.
Okay.
And you said something like moving your lips like a horse.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny that I didn't even know that that was the first one. But that, I mean, like, I don't think about this stuff, but if it seemed that it was developed, it's surely because I was doing journalism for 4 or 5 years before that. And you sort of touched on that before. Like, that really helped because it taught me the value of, like, a good story, finding a story, like, knowing how to ask people questions to get that story, and working hard into a deadline. And also something that I think is super important that many people on the internet don't get is, like, the importance of being able to write clearly and succinctly, but especially for like a headline. And a headline in a newspaper is something that sometimes it takes them longer to write than an article, right? And it like from that, I think I learn everything. Like when I'm doing an Instagram caption or something, like even if I'm not thinking about it, I've been trained to use the right words to catch people's attentions through journalism. So I assume a lot of those skills, are still there for me to make the most of, but obviously it's in a subconscious way. Like I'm not sitting there going, what would I do if it was a newspaper article or something, but it all helps. And it's fortunate that I could hit the ground running with videos like that, because it really, those early ones were what built an audience that hung around.
Yeah, no kidding. And you have a very supportive audience, a very active audience that I've been able to, like I said, as I've moved here, I've kind of jumped in and I'm like, oh, this is such a helpful guide. And I'm such a research girl that I look for the best possible tips and tricks. And Oliver's have seemed to be the most helpful and supplemental to my time here in France. So can't recommend
That's
this page enough.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Well, Oliver, thank you for taking time to talk to us. And it's been such a pleasure to talk about travel and about a little bit of your experience here in Paris. One last question for you that I love to ask all of our guests is, if you could tell yourself anything, your younger self anything today, what would you tell him before you moved to Paris?
I think I wish if I could talk to him. How old is he, this younger version of myself?
Let's say 10 years.
He's 10 years old?
He's 10 years younger than you are today.
Okay. I'd say, Oliver, you're going to have to be patient. Learn now how to be patient, because growing a company or figuring things out with, like we just talked about before, a French administration or whatever, a lot of these things are bang your head against the wall, frustrating. And I think the only way to deal with them is patience. And so if I could have taught my 10-year younger self to implement more patience in his life, I think it would make a big difference. Still today, I'd tell myself that, because I think a lot of people lack it, including me. And I'd like to hope that when he got to my age now, he'd be a really calm, zen, passive, happy guy. Maybe not passive, but like figured everything out. And that would be the lesson. Be more patient.
No kidding. But like also Paris, I think, is a great place to learn that. As fast as the city is, it is so difficult, at least someone from the West, to get things done. Like with the American state of mind, that's like, if you're 5 minutes late, you're insulting me and like our meeting is canceled. Here, you're 30 minutes late. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm having a cigarette. It's fine.
It's true. Like what I said goes for the starting a company or dealing with admin, but it also goes with like you just said, with France and French people and the pace. It makes a big difference, and it especially when you're a foreigner and you're like I'm slowing people down. If I'm going to call up someone and ask them questions or ask about an invoice or something, I'm like the stupid foreigner, and I'm aware of that. And I'm by doing that, I'm asking people to be patient with me. So the least I could do is be patient for everybody as well. So,
Great to implement in every part of our life is patience in Paris. yes. Well, thank you, Oliver. We appreciate your time. And everyone, as I mentioned, I will make sure to link all of the Earful Towers information in our show notes. And please follow along Listen to the Earful Tower on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your streaming services. And we will see you next time on Cageless.
Thanks so much for having me, Jenny.
Yes, thanks. Bye.